Welcome to the Bruce Poinsett Show. This is the world's most dangerous infomercial. Along with my producer, Ada, we bring you this bi-weekly news, commentary, and interview experience from the Numbers FM studio at the Portland Art Museum. You can catch the full show on Wednesdays at 7 p.m. on 96.7 The Numbers FM. And you can catch clips on youtube.com/Bruce Poinsett, plus exclusive bonus content by becoming a member at patreon.com/Bruce Poinsett. Now, usually we'd be recording these live, but I'm out of studio this month. That said, we've got a very special episode with you. Normally about this time, we'd be talking about the news stories you might have missed, but we're actually going to be dedicating this week's news segment to my hometown of Lake Oswego and my alma mater, the Lake Oswego School District. So for those who don't know, Lake Oswego School District, LOSD, is currently in, discussions, but they're not taking that seriously. So there's been pressure from students and community members to get SROs out of schools. What are SROs? You say they're student resource officers, also known as COPs. Yes. So in other districts, for example, probably most notably Portland Public Schools, Gresham, other districts around the Portland metro area down to Salem, they have actually taken steps or actually removed SROs from their schools, which was a big demand that came up, especially during the 2020 protests. And, you know, a lot of institutions, a lot of school districts, including LOSD, they came out with equity statements. They made a lot of, they talked a big game, but since the students asked, because I'm also part of this group, Respond to Racism LO, and we've held multiple discussions. We're going to show some clips from one of them that happened most recently, but we've held multiple discussions on the need to remove SROs. We've talked with students, talked with parents, and I can tell you personally, I've gotten complaints from families that it's been disturbing, not just because the actions, like you can go down a YouTube rabbit hole of all of the news stories of SROs throughout the country harassing and brutalizing students, especially with cases of racial profiling, because, again, all the same problems you have with cops in the streets are the same problems you have with cops in schools, except, you know, the students obviously have even less power than, you know, someone who might be stopped in traffic. So, yeah, I've had parents complain to me about the actions. LO, for those who don't know, has two SROs, and I've gotten complaints about one in particular over the last few years, especially since I started, because SROs and LO1 are relatively new, but since starting with Respond to Racism, which started in 2017, year has not gone by where I haven't gotten complaints from someone about SROs. But the problem that often arises is when people take those complaints to the superintendent or they take them to the principal, you know, they hit a roadblock because they're told, you know, file a formal complaint. But they also, there's a real culture of retaliation that happens in the district, whether it be, you know, from people with inside, even outside. So I mentioned earlier that we had held a discussion on SROs with Respond to Racism very recently. In fact, this past August, with input and a panel of the student panel. So as a result of that, I should also mention that Respond to Racism was a group that was co-founded by my mother, Willie Poinsett. Shout out to her. And she was recently organization Respond to Racism. You know, they table at the farmer's market. So she actually had some random white man come up and harass her about that and really, you know, wasn't accepting, you know, her responses. Was trying to tell her that even though, honestly, the person he should have been talking to was me, if anything, but telling her that we owed the officers an apology, that we owe the district an apology, how dare us. And really getting in her face about before one of the students who participated in the panel who happened to be there basically just had to like step back up to him and push him off. My mom is it's a woman in her 70s, but I digress. Anyways, you have this whole culture around this of protecting SROs, protecting anything that has to do with police budgets, which the conversation we've obviously had a lot when it comes to Portland. And it's just continue having these weird instances, this weird stonewalling, and knowing that, honestly, that the district is not, they say they're listening, but they're not on their side. They're not on the student side. It's funny. They talked about the process, and we're going to watch a video quickly or very soon where one of the students talks about the process when they were trying to have a district-wide discussion. They had student focus groups. They also had a survey they sent out throughout the district, in the name of transparency. But how transparent was that process? How transparent was that input process? Keep in mind, we're talking about Lake Oswego School District. So the students who are going to be most negatively affected are, a minority of Black and brown students, students with disabilities versus majority white students. So even that input process, how's that work? But let me stop for a minute. Let's watch a clip from the student panel where, student Sara Al-Kiram talks about, what those student focus groups look like. And also, actually, Perrin Timon, also another student who participated in those focus groups, also discusses that process. So, Ado, could you cue that up?
I guess I'll start. So the question was, how is the process behind the scenes? And how do we feel about the school district saying there are no complaints? Speaking from personal experience, I don't think that's true. I was at the SRO focus group with the students that was held during the support seminar and PACER time in the last few weeks of school. And we were told to express our thoughts on the SROs. Honestly, we were told that the recording wasn't going to be shared with anyone and to be using that information to tell the school district what the students think. Then watching back the school district recording or the meeting or whatever was happening, the presentation, the information was slightly skewed. Apparently, students are neutral on SROs, but I can testify as to say that there was not a single neutral thought spoken during that SRO focus group. Everything that was said was negative, and no one was in favor of SROs.
I can add on to that. I run a student group for gun violence prevention at Lake Ridge High School, and we also have spoken to the school district on SROs, and I know that my entire club is against having school resource officers in our schools, as well as I personally was on the SRO focus group that LOSD had in 2021, which lasted several months via Zoom. And as one of the three students there, I can tell you that students still were not a fan of SROs and wanted some solution that would not involve police in our schools.
Yeah, so heard from a couple students there. And it's funny, after we had this meeting, John Park, who works in LOSD, sent out survey results that they conducted as well from, they had almost 300 responses. So I want to, give them their credit there about, how do people feel about SROs? Now, the big one was, how satisfied are you? There's a 40.3% with no opinion. And, unsatisfied and extremely satisfied, I guess, didn't clock in with numbers. So you had another 34.5% saying they were satisfied, and even 17.7% saying they're extremely satisfied. So, no problem, right? But again, we're talking about a district of last time I remember, it was like when I was going to school, there was like, 1,200 people in my school. So, you know, weigh those responses as you will. But also, again, a vast majority white district, white privileged, and not going to be affected versus, you know, when you talk about complaints I've gotten, stories I've gotten, such as a black student, for example, who transferred for a very short time and was arrested by the SRO in front of everybody in the middle of the school because of the SRO allegedly, I guess, went on to do his own research and allegedly found like an old shoplifting warrant or something, and then used that again as a pretense to embarrass the kid by arresting him in front of the entire school. I don't know where, even if like, even if that was the case, where that would be acceptable, but these are the things that happen. Kids getting harassed, going to, you know, going to like SAT prep classes, all these different things that, again, people don't feel comfortable sending a complaint to the district because the district is clearly, they want to keep this program in June. They signed another 2-year agreement, you know, even though these discussions have been happening. We've gotten reports again of people who have tried to speak out and have been, there's no other way to say it, intimidated by people from within the district behind the scenes. I'm talking about students. Just dirty, dirty politics just to stop this discussion. And then we're left with these data points where, again, you heard the student saying there's nothing neutral, nothing positive that came out about SROs, but somehow when the actual report was made, students were neutral. I don't know how that works. And I'll say this as well, because, you know, the district, other people, supporters of having cops in schools are going to, you know, paint me as just some, you know, a disgruntled alumni, someone that's not giving this a fair chance. I also like to point out, again, I've been with Respond to Racism near the, you know, since about 2 months since its inception, right? In that time, I've met with police officers, had discussions about this specifically, and I met, you know, one of those meetings was with one of the current SROs, James Usher, who, for all intents and purposes, nice guy. I haven't actually gotten, you know, I haven't gotten any complaints about him. Seems like a good guy. Also, I think the skills he has could be translated to many other fields serving people besides being a cop in a school. Like, just the thought. I'll have to, you know, again, I have nothing against him personally. Nothing against former LO police chief Dale Jorgensen, you know, but there's a lot of this, a lot of these good cop myths. You know, you've watched the news, you've probably seen those videos of SROs at the assembly dancing with black students and all this stuff. And it's this idea of like, what are you talking about? Why is this so bad? But the reality is, like, it does make certain students who are already isolated and feeling unwelcome there, as having the presence of a cop in school does not make them feel safer. And it's not something that students or their families feel particularly safe really complaining about to, or like filing formal complaints about against the district, because that just means potential retaliation, more isolation, more intimidation. And it's just like, you can't get a fair, it's hard to get a fair shot actually talking about this issue. And even when you do, you get the pushback. And we have another segment coming up on this show where we're going to talk about the superintendent's response. But in the meantime, we just need to, one, I want to really encourage parents and community members in the school district, especially, to support these students who are speaking out and actually listen. Don't just take the district's word at face value. Again, if they're willing to change the results of these student focus groups, they don't feel confident enough in the responses they got that were negative, and they feel that they need to change it to say that it was neutral. Who is that for? Who? It's not for the students. It's not for the student safety. Even now we're in this case where we're using school shootings as another impetus to say, well, clearly we need the SROs. But I'll remind people of an incident. I want to say it was Park Rose High School a few years ago, where a school shooting was stopped. It wasn't stopped by the cop. It was stopped by a staff member, former U of O football player, Keenan Lowe, who was a staff whose students had relationships with, whose students trusted to be able to tell him when they got tipped off that one of their classmates was planning to shoot up the school. And he stopped it. So never mind, like when we talk about safety in these schools, God forbid something like that happens. If the students don't even feel safe enough to, you know, if not all the students feel safe enough to even, you know, talk to the SRO or talk to the person who's supposed to be responsible for this, there's just all kinds of factors that, again, don't help the students. And I know lastly, before we get off of this, the district will also say, well, we did invest a bunch of resources into more counselors. And I think that's great. I do. Actually, I would encourage more of that, and more specifically more Black and brown counselors, more counselors specifically with cultural competency to deal with students who are isolated and underrepresented. But you know what would contribute to even more of that? We save the money we're spending on cops to put more of that money into more of those resources because it's needed.
The Bruce Poinsett Show will be back after this quick commercial break. The Bruce Poinsett Show is made possible by the support of members at patreon.com/brucepoinsett. Patreon is a service that allows you to directly support creators like myself through monthly or annual memberships. Become a member for as little as $3 a month and get access to exclusive bonus clips and live discussions. Check out this clip from the page.
Are you defending the prequels? Where does your defense end, Bruce?
So, you know what? Maybe this might surprise you, but yeah, the whole meal deal. I will defend the prequels, kind of. Again, I also had a disclaimer at the beginning that I would not put money on me if I were betting on this as a viewer, but will I defend the prequels? Yes.
If you enjoy this content and believe in the community I'm trying to build, please support by becoming a member at patreon.com/brucepoinsett.
And welcome back to the Bruce Poinsett Show. As we continue with this special episode dedicated to the Lake Oswego School District, I just want to share a little anecdote about how my trajectory working with the school district in this capacity of diversity, equity, inclusion, anti-racism, whatever you want to call it. So we have a new, well, I shouldn't say not new now, but the current superintendent, Jen Sheely, who, you know, it's been interesting. So I first met Jen when she was an assistant superintendent under Dr. Laura De La Cruz, the first woman of color superintendent in LO school district history in, I believe, 2018. And it's funny because I met Jen because she invited me to do a student panel for their professional development day, right? So I get to Lake Ridge that morning and actually run into Laura, the superintendent at the time, who we weren't great fans of each other, let's put it that way. And I thought it was funny just because, like, she was really surprised to see me there. And, you know, like, DEI, all that stuff was, you know, it's one of the things she was going to be bringing to the district. So the fact that she didn't know I was even going to be there doing a student panel for the teachers seemed odd. But also what I gleaned from that, and I'll never know if this is true or not, is whether just Jen went behind her back to bring me there or something. But, you know, for what it's worth, you know, I took it as kind of like a good omen of the moment anyway, of like, okay, cool. Fast forward to today, and we have Jen on, you know, videos. Jen actually happened to be on the video, the student panel about SROs, talking and, gaslighting students, gaslighting me about the whole process. And, you know, a beautiful time, giving excuses of, you know, this is how things are. But to bring it out of the SROs for a minute, because again, you know, the work I've been doing is sort of more in a larger scope of DEI. A thing I found out that I didn't know before the meeting, and that's a little stain on me, is that they had actually changed their DEI department. So for those who don't know, Elo only recently even started taking DEI seriously, like around the time that, you know, RTR got started, maybe a little bit before then, something like that. And they brought in a director at the time and ran him into the ground and gave him no support. And then demoted the position of director into a TOSA, which is a teacher on special assignment. Well, also, because they, you know, reached out to us about, you know, help in getting this person. So we got to see the job description. And it's like seven different jobs for, you know, still of like the work of a director or a few directors, but now
put onto one person.
And this was under Superintendent Laura De La Cruz, mind you. I want to specify that. Again, the person bringing in the DEI initiative, cutting the DEI resources and saying, it's not a demotion. I always remember, it's not a demotion of the position. She's elevating it to the office of the superintendent, you know, because DEI isn't like a whole job in itself and not just a thing that one of the things the superintendent does. That seems totally sustainable. Whatever. So eventually, I'll say they elevated the position up to a director again. And then either earlier this year or last year, they moved the person who was in that director position to the vice principal of one of the high schools. And so it was kind of just like vacant. And that's kind of like where I was last with them, because honestly, you keep dealing with people and they keep BSing you. You're just like, yeah, this is a waste of my time. And there's other things I could be doing. Come to find out, fast forward, that it's no longer a DEI department. It is under there is an initiative now, their Culture of Belonging initiative. Now, Ada, I don't know about you, but like when you hear that DEI has changed to Culture of Belonging, what kind of signs does that give you?
That they are trying. It's like the whole diversity game all over again that we've been playing for years, of like culture of belonging has no agency, no seriousness. Truly, it honestly sounds like the tagline of a PBS television show, if I'm being real.
Yeah. I mean, it's a little, again, for a district that wasn't exactly, you know, a model of DEI initiatives for the first place, for their answer to be to water it down further. I don't know. Pretty rough. I don't think it's the right thing. As an alumni who went through there, dealt with a bunch of racism, it's very concerning as someone who deals with students still dealing with a lot of the exact same racism I dealt with. In some cases, worse.
I'm not going to lie. I'm a Beaverton School District alumni, and we have frequently looked at y'all crazy. The Lake Oswego District does not function well. One of my best friends went to Lake Oswego, and he left because he was getting beat up for being black regularly.
Yeah.
This is wild.
No, no, but it's the culture of belonging. That said, that brings us, because it is the B block, and we like to be a little bit more lighthearted here. Yeah. So we have a new game show from the same folks who brought you Hotep or Ferengi. Today we got you Culture of Belonging or Culture of Bullshit.
Yeah.
You decide.
You decide.
Let's start up. Let's go to the Culture of Belonging site. I want to just go up there and follow along with me, if you will.
We're here.
So I want you to scroll down, and on the right-hand side, you should see there should be a photo of a poster of Angela Davis. Do you see that?
Yep, I do.
Yeah, nice, right? Art by an LOHS student.
Yep.
Awesome. It's a fun backstory of that. That poster, very shortly after it was put up, was ripped down by the janitor. It's not back up. It's torn down. The district didn't do anything about that. I learned that from the students, of course, involved, but it's weird. They're definitely advertising it here on the site, along with, let's see, Asian Cultural Festival, promoted by the LHS Asian American Student Union, the Black Student Mentorship Program.
Mm-hmm.
There's a guest speaker. You know what all these things have in common? It's not stuff the district's doing. It's stuff the students are doing.
And like, not trying to get, well, no, to get on their head. These have all are events that are like past.
Yeah.
Like nothing from my understanding is from the new school year, or there's some stuff in here from like 2021 and 2022 or not 22, excuse me, 2020.
Yeah. But yeah, again, culture of belonging or culture of bullshit, you decide.
Something's leaning towards the bullshit, to be honest.
So I mentioned the organization Respond to Racism earlier, and I want to direct you to the Culture of Belonging's partnerships page, because I found something very interesting there. So you see this Respond to Racism, you see the logo, right?
I do.
Now, when you click on the logo and it takes you to the Respond to Racism homepage, tell me, do you notice anything, I don't know, different about the logo?
Oh, wait, I didn't catch this. Oh, that's
so. Oops. For those listening at home, on their partnerships page, LOSD has Respond to Racism, LO for Love, and LO Change. LO Change, for those who don't know, we don't have a whole thing to get into this, is a group of teachers and community members who are pushing for, among other things, to get SROs out of schools for more equity in the curriculum. And they no longer exist, but that's still up there. That's weird. But no, they have a logo for Respond to Racism that is two red bars with Respond to Racism in Lake Oswego in the middle. Now, that's not our logo. Our logo definitely has a purple, red, green stripes, flag, has Respond to Racism, has dialogue, action, learning. And to be fair, we had a previous logo, which was a stool that said dialogue, action, learning. But again, neither of those are whatever this thing is.
Wait, they just made their own logo?
Yeah. Why? So someone's got to explain that to me. Why would you just make up someone's logo, again, on your partnerships page? These are the organizations that are supposed to, you know, back you up, give you credibility.
Oh my God.
That is one is disrespectful. Two, again, why?
Yeah, what's the reasoning? I'm like now confused. And like this is something else I was gonna add, just like to the two parts of the site that we're looking at. The two pieces of the site thus far are very like again, I don't know who's doing your website for a school district, but like these are very underdeveloped. Like these are like real not well done. And I think I can say that because I have no attachment to LO, so I'm gonna be a little bit more blunt here. Like this is a pretty bad website. Not gonna lie.
Oh man. Yeah. So again, culture of belonging or culture of bullshit, you decide. But you know what? We've talked about Jen a lot. Let's let her speak. So again, I told you we did a panel on SROs, and naturally, like one she attended, and people had questions for her as a superintendent about not just the SRO student resource officer program, but also equity in general in the state of DEI in general. One of those people in the clip we're going to watch, one of those people was myself. So in this clip, we're going to watch me asking Jen about, you know, what was the state of the DEI department?
I mean, one
clip. And I will say that her answer was curious. But again, why should I put words into Jen's mouth? Let's let her speak for herself.
Dr. Sheila, if you don't mind, one more question. But we brought up this, again, one of the potential ideas, resources, responses to some of these structural issues being like more DEI resources, maybe a DEI department. And I'm curious what the obstacles are to building that out in the district. Is it just budget or? Yeah.
That's a great question too, Bruce. I don't know that I think that there's any huge obstacles to building up that department. I think it has more to do with the structure of the department and creating something that the community, the students, the families, the staff know how to utilize correctly. You had some examples earlier of, and we've gone through a couple directors, Teresa is an administrator, so she's been elevated back to that. And as most of you know, she's now in one of our schools, which she's amazing. So I'm super happy that she's able to be there and work on the ground with our students. And right now we're trying to look at it with our new consultants from Engage to Change to figure out like what is the best structure for this, because the reality of it is equity has to be in everything we do and it can't stand alone in a department. And so it's important to us to build it up correctly instead of just putting a person and saying, that's your job, because that doesn't work. It hasn't worked for our district. And so we're really trying to build it up from the base. And I think getting a stronger foundation in how it affects everything that happens in our students to make sure that the culture of belonging is for all students is the best way we can go about this. And sometimes that takes a little longer because we're trying to build it, but I'm hoping that our work with Engage to Change is gonna help us do that. And that's just an organization equity group that we have hired to kind of help us. And from the board to the administration to figure out what is the best way to build a system that's going to ensure that our students all feel like they are safe, that they have an adult they can talk to, that they not only can, you know, belong to Lake Oswego School District, but they contribute to why we're excellent. And I think all of our students have the right to do that and be that. And so that's what we're trying to build right now.
So let me translate that for the people watching at home. So when Jen talks about, you know, equity has to be in everything we do, as she also talks about why they've changed from a DEI department and staff to a culture of belonging initiative, what that kind of means is we're just keeping the work in the hands of the consultants and equity, as far as actually pushing it, is going to be in the hands of the same people that were doing it before. The staff and the teachers that the students were complaining about.
Don't trust.
The staff and the students that, or I should say, the staff and the teachers who weren't taking whatever trainings they were getting seriously before. But, you know, it's going to be in everything we do. So maybe there'll be even more consultants getting more money to not teach people things, to teach people the, I don't know, the most safest line of equity possible. But it's clearly, it's not, again, it's not responsive to the needs of the people who need it most.
Not at all.
And it's, you know, it's a bunch of, obviously, you get all the word salad, you get all that, but I just really want to really hone in on this, of the same consultants that told you all the negative student responses to SROs were somehow neutral. Mm-hmm. The same people we're talking about here.
I would also like to add, first and foremost, I do not speak for Bruce. Anyone who is watching this, I speak for myself. I'm a separate entity from Bruce's programs and everything that Bruce is involved with. But I have some opinions. I think it's very well known, and this is coming from someone who's spent a lot of time as a student working for better opportunities for Black students. One of my favorite things that people play is the... So pretty much what she just said to answer your question was, there's nothing holding the program back except for the fact that we need to have more conversations. And I ask, why aren't these conversations already been had? Something is holding it back, and it is you and your team not prioritizing it. It's simple as that.
When we have these conversations, because it's not that they're not being had, but you get this response. Mm-hmm. You have, because this is, you know, for the timestamp people, we're currently, the whole meeting video is an hour, 53 minutes and some change. This is the hour 47 mark. Okay. She has had the opportunity to hear from these students, hear from community members, never mind the years before that of the same thing. And instead of taking it seriously, they find new games, they push, they find new buttons to push, new things to hide behind. And we keep doing this same dance. I'll just say again, when you hear, for those who maybe you're not familiar with the lingo, when you hear someone talk about equity has to be in everything we do, and they're not talking about staffing, they're not talking about resources, they're talking about the same problematic people that they've been working with. Well, again, I ask you, culture of belonging or culture of bullshit? You decide.
The Bruce Poinsett Show will be back after this quick ad break. BrucePoinsett.com is your one-stop shop for everything Bruce Poinsett. You have my services such as freelance writing and editing, creative nonfiction courses, as well as customized writing classes, event facilitation, and digital content creation. Again, go to BrucePoinsett.com for a quote and make sure to sign up for our newsletter so you don't miss any news or updates.
Welcome back to the Bruce Poinsett Show. We have a special guest in studio today, Tara Sonali Miller. How are you doing today?
I'm good. I always get nervous talking about things that I care about, so I'm like a little heart racing, but I'm very excited.
Thank you. Tara is the co-owner of the Bhakti Yoga Movement Center, which is in Southeast Portland, if I'm correct. Yeah, and also you recently got married, so congratulations on that. Like, that's in order.
Thanks, I appreciate it.
How's married life treating you?
Married life is good. It's, I can't decide if it's quite different from not being married, but I think it's good because the ritual of being friends and, yeah, just like being really vulnerable with my wife in front of a lot of people. That's what's about it now.
Again, congratulations. So we connected at like a sort of like entrepreneurs kind of like gathering thing, and you know, the conversation of yoga came up, which is how I found out you were co-owner Bhakti Yoga Movement Center. But I will say one thing I did not mention during that time, and it will be a little bit of a weird confession to make right now, but it's on air, and I weighed to myself, this be awkward or awkward enough to where we should do it on air. So we're doing it. Anyways,
I can't wait for what's going to happen.
Yeah. So I was like, yeah, I've been doing yoga for like 10 years now. I think we talked about that. What I didn't say is that like the vast majority of that is like YouTube white girl yoga, which I don't know. We actually did a segment earlier on cultural appropriation. So,
yeah. This is a big confession right now.
Yeah.
It's a big confession.
Yeah. So I got to, you know, confess to the world, or it was like weird confessing to you, but it's just like, yeah. Should I feel guilty? Do I need to repent?
What do you think? How do you feel about it? I know this is an interview with me, but I'm curious about how you feel.
You know, it's, so there was a time where I feel like I wasn't as aware of like resources and things out there. Mm-hmm. Where I was like, oh, well, this is kind of like what's readily accessible and what, you know, someone put me onto yoga, what, you know, YouTube was just readily advertising to me. So I just kind of like did the thing where it's like, oh yeah, let's just do what's easy. But yeah, as you know, become more aware of resources, you become more aware of like other creators, it becomes like, This feels weird. And it's not like that's the other thing we were talking about earlier, where it's not the like just in your face, like, ooh, this feels super gross. Like, this person is delightful. I don't know what to do.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's just in the back of my mind, it's like one of those things where it's like something just kind of feels off, even if it's not like overtly gross, if that makes sense.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, because I think that for so long, that's all that's been available. That's how I started yoga. You know, like my teacher was a white woman, skinny white woman. And for me, what's most important in terms of yoga is that people have the opportunity to access the practices in a way that feels supportive for them, and that we continue to support and educate teachers of more diverse representations, like Black and Brown folks, fat folks, folks who aren't necessarily able-bodied. I think there are, obviously we exist, those teachers do exist, and there's so many different kinds of yoga out there. I think one of the things that's kind of challenging for people who are curious, we think of yoga as one thing often, and like that's how it's been packaged to us in the West, as there's only one way to do it and this is the right way, when really one of the things that's amazing to me and special to me about yoga is that, one, it's not just the physical practice, right? It's meditation, it's breathing, there are all kinds of, it's ethics, there's philosophy around it. But even with the physical practice, there's lots of different ways to do it. And everyone might have a different type of yoga that aligns for them. Like the type of yoga that I like might not be the type of yoga that you like, and that's okay. Because there's different entry points, I think that is going to mean that like some of us get into yoga with white girl YouTube. Like that's, to me, I would so much rather have people be doing that than not be doing the practices at all. But it's also, you know, it is hard to see and experience that. That's also why a lot of people don't try yoga, or they try it once and then they leave because they have a bad experience with one of those white teachers. So that's something that's also really, really hard to see. And, you know, it's something I experienced too. Like I tried some yoga classes with white teachers that were terrible. And the only reason that I landed with the teacher I did was because my mom and I committed to go with each other so that we would never be the only brown person in the room. And so it became less about the teacher and more about us being able to experience the practices.
Right, right. And I think that's a good transition to talk about the story of the Bhakti Yoga Movement Center. So can you just talk about when it started and like how long have you been teaching?
Curiosity. Yeah. Well, the Bhakti Yoga Movement Center has been around for like 15 years. It was started by one of my teachers, Lisa May Osborne. And then she transitioned ownership to Zaya, my co-owner, and me a year ago. So I've only been in ownership of this space for a year. And I've been teaching. So the place where I started going to classes with my mom was the Bhakti Yoga Movement Center. The reason that I started going there, I was like, I finally committed, like, I'm not going to let the whiteness and the for-profitness of yoga keep me from practices that are part of my own cultural lineage anymore. And so my mom and I committed that to each other. And I was just trying to find a studio in Portland that was like doing something good for the community, something, anything, other than just profiting and like having white people yoga classes. And I was drawn to the Bhakti Yoga Movement Center. It was called the Bhakti Shop at that time. Because they donated money every month. They had a fundraiser to a different organization or a community member who just needed support. So they were like, this was like seven or eight years ago, really like enacting a form of mutual aid through the studio that was important to me. So that's something that meant a lot to me. And I had a really consistent practice there for 3 or 4 years. Where I went like once or twice a week, every week. I started to build relationship with the teachers there and the other students. And that's when I did my training. So I learned to become a yoga teacher through this same studio that I now co-own. And my training started in January 2020. So it went online in the middle of the training because of the pandemic. And I've been teaching since then. And I think about like a couple years into teaching, or maybe even just a year and a half, Lisa May, the former owner, approached Zaya and me, my co-owner and I, basically just being really burnt out on trying to run a small business and a yoga community in a way that's like accessible and maintaining integrity to the roots of yoga while also surviving in capitalism. It's very tiring. And she was ready to transition it on, but she didn't want to just close it. Like, she wanted to kind of transition it to the next generation. So that's how that happened. That's a bit of the story about the space.
Yeah. And you know, when I was looking into it, one of the things that just jumped out to me is just like, you have very, you know, extensive like online library as, you know, someone who's been doing the at-home practice. That's, you know, the first place I didn't actually got a couple classes on there that I really enjoyed. So, you know, just want to plug that. But yeah, can you just talk about kind of like the different offerings that you have at the center?
Yeah. So accessibility is really important to us. And I think the online offerings is a big part of that. Like, I remember when we met and you were talking about your yoga practice, or even like a little bit felt a little guilty maybe about doing that on at home practice. Mm-hmm. And like, is that really yoga? And yes, 100% it is. And that's, I think, really important. I think we all have different types of yoga or ways to practice it that work best for us. So some people really need that in-person community. Like, I can hear someone else breathing and I can like see the teacher and connect with them. So we have in-person classes. We have about 25 or more live classes a week.
Like, how big are those classes usually?
We're trying to keep it pretty small because of COVID. So up to 16 in those classes. And also the studio, even before the pandemic, was really big on smaller classes so that people could really have that opportunity to build relationships with the teachers. We try to like know all of our students, know their names, know things about their families, because being moving your body in collective and in person can be really vulnerable. And it's important to us that we're like building relationship with each other. Also, I mean, maybe you've experienced this, but a lot can come up when you're practicing yoga. It's not just a physical practice. And so people can have, you know, emotional experiences, and we just want to be able to support people through whatever they're going through. So we try to keep the classes smaller for that reason. And then all of our in-person classes are also live streamed. So anyone who does want like the structure of the live class where they know, okay, the teacher's going to be there. I know for me, it helps me stay more accountable to my practice, even if I'm practicing at home, to have like something scheduled. But for people who, you know, so many reasons, like if you have childcare, if you don't have access to good transportation, like having that at home option is really important. And then we record a lot of those classes. So that's what our on-demand library is, where you can take classes, you know, at any time, whenever it works for your schedule. And we try to make the price of those really accessible too. And we have an equity pricing program. So we have our regular class rates. And then for folks who can't afford those, they can reach out about equity pricing. And then we also have our BIPOC only class once a week and our queer and trans class once a week.
Nice, nice. So like with like the BIPOC class, for example, like, yeah. Like what would that look like? Is that just like a certain level, what's the structure?
Yeah, great question. We try to make it all levels. And then usually what we'll do, like so it's a rotation of teachers. So we have, right now in that rotation, we have three of us who teach every other week. And I basically just check in with people when they get there and just see what they're wanting. So if everyone's wanting something slow and restorative, that's what we'll do. If people want to be a little bit more active and move energy, we'll do that. Sometimes, usually it's a mix. So we'll just do a mix. And we just really try to meet people where they're at.
Awesome. Yeah. Awesome. Is that like a certain day of the month? When is it?
Nice. It's every Tuesday. No, every Thursday at 7 p.m. is the BIPOC class. Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
Just going to plug that for the audience.
Yes.
You've kind of talked about some of these while we've been doing this interview, but is there something that maybe you haven't identified yet that you feel is like the biggest misconception that you kind of hear about yoga?
You have to be flexible to do yoga. Hmm. Yeah, that is what I most commonly hear. My wife said it to me, you know, like, I would try to get her into class because, you know, when you do something that feels really good for you, you want to bring all your loved ones in. And she's like, oh no, I can't do it. I'm not flexible enough. And it's taken a long time for me to undo that myth that she has. I'm not really flexible naturally. So I definitely had that idea before I started. I think the idea that you have to be flexible to be able to do yoga. One of my teachers says, if you can inhale and exhale, you can do yoga. So it doesn't even have to be physical at all. And even the physical practices are not about flexibility.
Right, right. So, you know, people watching, if you're like, oh, I need to do things like maybe like modified poses. And obviously for those who haven't done yoga, I guess there'd be some explanation of that. But like, you know, there's even things like chair yoga and whatnot when it comes to accessibility. So it's like, it really is like all levels.
Yes, exactly. And even in one class, like we could have one class where there are four different people doing completely different things. I think our teachers at our studio really try to offer a lot of options in every class that they're doing, rather than this idea that like everyone should be doing the exact same thing at one time. And we have, a chair yoga class every Thursday from 2 to 3. That's online only. Our teacher moved to Costa Rica, Michael, during the pandemic. So he still teaches from there.
Tara, thank you again for taking the time. If people want to learn more about the Bhakti Yoga Movement Center, sign up for a class, where can they go?
Yeah, so they can go online, the BYMC. .com. We have a long acronym. And then we're also on Instagram, the Bhakti Yoga Movement Center. And we're sort of on Facebook. We have a Facebook page, but it's not the most up to date. And then folks can always email us too. It's connect@thebymc.com. We really like to talk with folks, especially if people are feeling nervous or have questions, and we get folks reaching out about different like physical things that they're dealing with. And it's really helpful for us to be able to reassure them that, our space is a space for them and to kind of ease any anxiety that they might be having about trying yoga out.
Awesome. Well, yeah. Tara, thank you again for the time, and yeah, people, you know, go find out more about the Bhakti Yoga Movement Center.
Thank you, Bruce. Thanks for having me.
This has been the Bruce Poinsett Show. Make sure to catch us every second and fourth Wednesday at 7 p.m. on The Numbers FM, as well as on youtube.com/Bruce Poinsett. And for exclusive clips, go to patreon.com/Bruce Poinsett and become a member. In the meantime, hey, Black people, trust me, it won't hurt. See you next week.